You're listening to The Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name's Matt Brand. Great to be with you this lunchtime for The Country Hour. Harvest is underway on the Northern Territory's biggest pineapple farm, which these days has nearly 4 million pineapple plants in the ground. That is a lot of pineapple.
Well, so far it's looking excellent. You know, we've got good size and flavour's good, so can't complain. And obviously, we'll just have to see how many sort of bins per hectare we get to rate how good they are, really.
Yeah, very soon you and I get the chance to jump into the paddock and check out these juicy pineapples for ourselves. We'll also today check out a cassava trial that's underway in Katherine, which is focusing on growing the tuber for cattle feed. And we meet the Brahman bull, who is winning the internet and fast becoming an outright celebrity.
People love him. You know, you can have the horses there and everyone wants to see Bruce. So like the PCYC kids, I took him down there and they were all giving him a rub. And the idea of Bruce is to show the fun-loving side of the rodeo animals as well.
Yep, Brucey the Brahman. He's got his own Facebook page, as you do. He's an absolute champion. You get to meet him before 1:30. Stick around. We're broadcasting right across the territory on ABC Radio, and g'day to those listening to our podcast. A GoFundMe page set up to raise money for a Northern Territory farmer who lost both of his legs this month in a farm accident has made more than $50,000 in just 24 hours. After spending time in the ICU at Royal Darwin Hospital, Gavin Howie is now in Sydney for major surgery. We've been told that he is just overwhelmed by the donations and the kind words that are flowing via this GoFundMe page, which, as I said, only set up yesterday. The page, it was put up by a friend of the family, Rhiannon Phillips. Rhiannon, first of all, you've been speaking to him this morning. How is Gavin?
Gavin's, he's incredible, honestly. In such a tragic circumstance, Gavin manages to smile and remain positive with a cheeky sort of outlook to life. He's honestly an inspiration. Both him and Lauren, they're an incredible duo, and his spirits are high. And like he told me this morning, he said Lauren had to bring my jeans down because I'm walking out of here. So that's the kind of guy he is, and that's what makes him so special.
Do you mind telling us a little bit about what happened a couple of weeks ago?
From what we've been told, Gavin was just involved in an accident with some machinery out on the farm that resulted in the loss of both of his limbs. That's about all I can say on that at this point.
He's in Sydney. What's ahead of him?
Yeah, so they've been in touch with a specialist, a prosthetic specialist in Sydney. I'm told he's one of the best, and he's been straight on to Gavin and Lauren's case, and he looks like he's going to have looks like he's getting some full titanium legs made up that will hopefully with the right rehabilitation and support, he will be able to be fully mobile again in time.
And walk,
so very exciting things.
Yeah, and walk out of there, as he said.
Yeah, put his jeans back on and walk back out of there. So pretty inspiring.
The response to this GoFundMe page, just incredible. What's it meant to Gavin, Lauren and the family?
Oh, look, and it's just so, they're so overwhelmed. I spoke with Gavin this morning and he's just, there are no words. He's just so overwhelmed with the response and the generosity of everybody. I mean, to know Lauren and Gav is to truly know salt of the earth people. So we knew the response was going to be good. We just didn't realise how good. I mean, when I first set the page up, you know, I said to Gavin, "Oh, what goal do you want me to put on there? Like, what number?" And he said, "Oh, 15,000 would just help us out so much, you know, and just get the boys flown in and out of Darwin and Sydney, and you know, have somewhere for Lauren to stay while she's down there for rehabilitation, and just everything, you know, that's going on with the farm. And we had the 15 in the first hour and a half. So it was just phenomenal. It's mind-blowing. They're really overwhelmed and just so grateful for all the support. They really are.
For those who haven't got involved thus far, how can they? Rhiannon?
Oh, basically, if you go to the GoFundMe page, you can donate direct with the GoFundMe page. And share it on your Facebook page. That's the biggest thing, is just to basically get the word out there, and the more support we can get for Gavin and Lauren and their family, the better. Incredible people who deserve the world. So this has just been so amazing, the GoFundMe page, and everything's been incredible.
Yep. So if you search GoFundMe and then type in Gavin Howie, you'll find it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Just it'll be all over Facebook, and if you could just share it with your just type in GoFundMe, and you'll see Gavin's. We've called it "Get Gavin Back on His Feet" fund, pun intended, because that's the kind of guy Gavin is. He's a bit cheeky, so we sort of thought we'd go down that track. But yeah, GoFundMe and look up "Get Gavin Back on His Feet" fund. And you'll be able to donate directly through the page and then share it on your Instagram and Facebook, which would be fantastic.
Modern medicine's amazing, isn't it? Titanium rods and all that stuff.
It's incredible. I've just recently flown back from Sydney after seeing Gavin Lauren, and when we were there, we were talking about how 30 years ago, if this had happened, they'd be in a very different circumstance, and just how with the innovation of modern medicine, he's going to walk out of there. It's just mind-blowing. Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time today.
You're very welcome. And thank you to everyone out there. It's been incredible. The family can't thank you enough.
That's Rhiannon Phillips, a family friend of Gavin and Lauren Howie. Gavin down in Sydney awaiting that surgery. And this GoFundMe page, it's just unbelievable. I've got it up in front of me right now. So in the last 24 hours, it's now reached a total of $52,373, which is wonderful. And as Rhiannon mentioned, the headline for this is "Get Gav Back on His Feet." And I noticed the page has just been updated with a lovely message from Annette Howie. So that's Gavin's mum. She says, "Thank you, friends, for your overwhelming support. Gavin and Lauren were reluctant to ask for help, but they now have a greater purpose. They are now desperate to get about and thank people personally and spend time educating farmers in safety, insurance pitfalls, etc. If you can continue and share and donate, Gavin will be able to get the best legs possible so that he can achieve their goals." There you go. This afternoon, make sure you jump on to GoFundMe and get Gav back on his feet. The Howie family are friends of the Country Hour. They've been on this program many a time. Awful to hear that news about Gavin, but heartening to see this GoFundMe page, which, raised so much money within 24 hours.
Get the latest news whenever you want, wherever you are, with the ABC News app. Top stories from Australia and around the world. Choose your news with personalised topics you care about. Get the latest breaking news with live notifications, as well as the weather and feature articles. Download the ABC News app, Australia's most trusted news source.
Now, did you know that on the outskirts of Humpty Doo lies the Northern Territory's largest pineapple farm? Since its first harvest in 2015, the farm has been gradually expanding, and this year it's got nearly 4 million pineapple plants in the ground. 4 million of them. The first pines for the year are now being picked. To see how the year is shaping up, I went out to the farm and caught up with the manager out there, Mark Smith.
G'day, Matt. How you going? It's Mark Smith here from Darwin Fruit Farms. Just out in the pineapple paddock at the moment, looking at what we're going to start harvesting tomorrow.
The season underway here for the pineapple plantation. How's the crop looking in 2019?
Well, so far it's looking excellent. You know, we've got good size and flavour's good, so can't complain. And obviously we'll just have to see how many sort of bins per hectare we get to rate how good they are, really.
The wet season that's been talked about has not been really good so far. Has that meant anything to pineapples?
Oh, not really. It's probably beneficial more than anything. They don't like too much water, so it's better if we can control the water. But a little bit of rain here and there is good for the pineapples and probably not so good for the fishermen.
And you're both, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Harvest starting now, you go right through till September. I mean, how many pineapples does that mean?
Well, look, we want to do, our aim is about 150,000 trays per year, which is quite substantial. If you know, obviously different counts in the trays, but you could probably average 9 pineapples in a tray. You can work that one out. I haven't got my calculator.
No, it's a lot.
Yeah. So we didn't quite get there last year, but we're learning a lot, and you know, things are improving all the time.
I got the opportunity to be out here on the very first harvest in 2015. So, well, this is now the fifth harvest for the farm. I mean, how much has changed over that period?
Oh, obviously the amount we have in the ground since you're here, and I think we're really learning, getting a handle on how to grow them properly up here in Darwin. It's not an easy process. There's a lot of things that are working against you, but it's just time, and we've learnt, I think, by looking at these plants, you can see how healthy and how big the pines are. I think we're starting to get a handle on it now, slowly.
So when these are picked and put onto a truck, where are they heading to, Mark?
Well, that depends on Pinata. They're the marketers for the pineapples, and they'll actually give us orders to where we distribute them, but it could be anywhere, South Australia, Victoria, New South Wales. We don't send any to Queensland. There's enough there.
There's enough. There's enough.
Yeah, look, it depends where the stores have put the orders in to get them. So all over the southern part of Australia, really.
And I say put them on a truck, but do you put any on the rail?
No, they go on the truck. I like to get them down there as quick as possible with double drivers. You know, our aim is to get them to market as quick a time as possible so they're as fresh as possible. You know, they don't like sitting around. Get them out on the shelves when they're nice and fresh and best to eat then.
In terms of size, just from what I can see, it all looks uniform, but every now and then, do you get a thumper?
Oh, you do. Look, I got a couple last year that were a bit over 4 kilos each. I've got photos of them. I'll show you that. But no, look, generally, you know, we like to get sort of seven, eights and nines are probably best for the consumer. Not too small and not too big. The really big pineapples, not many people want to handle them, and you don't get too many in a tray. So, yeah, they get devoured pretty quickly at work. Don't worry about that.
And before I let you go, you did cut a few pines for us earlier. Impressive to watch you on the knife. But just for the average consumer who goes and buys one, what's your tip on how to cut a pine properly and get the most out of your purchase?
Well, if you look on the back of the Pinata label, I'll show you exactly how to do it in a diagram. You may take a wedge out, a bit like a boat, peel the skin off, take the top out, chop it into sections and eat it straight away.
I've actually noticed that. So the company must have acknowledge that as well, that maybe people didn't quite get how to do it properly.
Yeah, you want to get your most of your pineapple, you know, and that's a pretty easy, less messy way to eat them. I mean, you can grab them by the top and peel the skin off and eat them straight away here. It's not a problem, as long as you don't mind juice all over your shirt. But, yeah, you know, I suppose you can get machines now that can actually, you know, decore and peel a pineapple if you're really lazy, but half the fun's cutting into it, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Always fun coming to this farm as well. Thanks so much for your time on the Country Hour.
No worries, Matt. Thank you.
Yeah, big thanks to Mark Smith from Darwin Fruit Farms. Harvest underway on the pineapple plantation. Nearly 4 million plants in the ground. And when you go out there, gee, it smells nice. It smells beautiful. And if you go to a major supermarket, I mean, you'll see these pineapples. You'll see them there. And often they're green. And I know the company at the moment's just trying to tell consumers that you don't have to wait for a pineapple to be golden. A lot of people think they need to be yellow before they're ripe to eat. That's not true. If they're there in the supermarkets, they are ready to eat. So even if they're green, grab it, enjoy it. Pineapples from Northern Australia. How good is that? It's 12:45 here on the Country Hour. We started today's program with the tragic news about this farming accident in the Top End. Gavin Howie sadly lost both of his legs. He's down in Sydney. He's waiting surgery. And a GoFundMe page that's been set up to help Gavin and the family with all the costs that are to come has already made more than $50,000. In just 24 hours, which is just lovely, isn't it? And it's not just the donations, some of the kind words that are flowing via this page. I'll just read out this one. I just think this is beautiful. This is from a fellow called Nick, and he says, I lost my leg at the hip from cancer in 1983 when I was 19 years old. I've been farming for the last 30-odd years. Don't believe anyone who tells you that you can't do something. Just find a way to do it in your own way. Good luck with everything, says Nick via this GoFundMe page set up to support Gavin Howie and his family. The page is called Get Gav Back on His Feet, and we heard earlier from Rhiannon, a family friend, who said Gavin's already made sure that the jeans are packed because he intends on walking out of that hospital there in Sydney. Beautiful stuff. We're going to check out a cassava trial in Katherine next here on the Country Hour. Stick around. Steve Miller Band. You are tuned into the Country Hour, broadcasting on the ABC right across the territory. Over the last couple of months on this program, we've been talking a fair bit about cassava. Cassava seems to be popping up on all sorts of agendas across the territory. A lot of farmers taking a look at this crop as potentially being a bit of a niche one for the territory. A farm near Katherine, you might remember, it grew a commercial crop of the tuber last year and sent a small quantity of it down south for sale. And just down the road at the Katherine Research Station, trials are now underway to find out how useful cassava could be as a stock feed. Carmen Brown took a walk through the crop with the DPI's Kira McCosker.
Well, this is probably about 10 months' growth of cassava, and when we plant it during the dry season, we're using the irrigator to strike it and get it to start off, and then obviously when the wet season comes along, when we do get one, we let the rain do the work.
Let's get in a little closer. This is looking pretty healthy. It's taller than me. It's doing well. It's growing well.
Yeah, so that's all the tops, of course. What we're really interested in is the tuber, what's beneath the ground. So we're actually growing this for... our interest mainly is in cattle feed and work that we're doing in Indonesia and in collaboration with the University of Queensland. And the nutritional breakdown of the tubers is that it's high in starch, high in energy. We're talking about 12, 14 megajoules of energy and about 4% protein. So people who know how to feed cattle, that's sort of not as much protein as corn, but the energy levels is equivalent to maize and products like that.
And it's commonly used in places like Indonesia, isn't it, to help finish cattle?
Yeah, so obviously, you know, there's heaps of cassava grown worldwide, Africa, Asian countries. Of course, it's grown over there for human consumption mostly, and the byproducts are then fed to cattle.
So if you know it grows well in the tropics and it's good for cattle, what is it that you're specifically trying to find out now?
Yeah, so there's a few interesting things that have come out of Indonesia, and one of the things is that like hydrogen cyanide compounds are contained in cassava, of course, and it binds up iodine and different things in humans. What we're sort of looking at is how do we treat the cassava that we harvest and make it safe for cattle production. And also we know from work in Indonesia that when you include around somewhere between 40 and 50% of cassava in the diet, performance of cattle goes backwards, and it doesn't appear to be related to the cyanic compound, so we're interested in knowing what is causing that association. The other thing is that we're told that, and we know that this cassava makes beautiful silage, but there's different responses or different abilities to get the cyanic compounds out of it when you do make silage. So, you know, we would be interested in trying to sort of sort that out and gain a bit more information about that.
So it's certainly not as simple as planting the crop and it's good to go. There is a treatment process to make sure that it's not toxic to both humans and cattle.
Yeah, that's right. Of course, this is probably relating to amount an animal is eating. You know, if they're only eating minor amounts, they might be able to get away with it. But yeah, if you're including it at decent rates, well, yeah, it does affect cattle reproduction growth. It's a cyanide, so...
Doesn't make you feel well, does it?
No. And if they ate it, if they gorged it, they would ultimately die.
Now, this crop has been growing for a couple of years here. There's a bit of mystery around the actual source of the mother of cassava, we'll call it, the original plant. I've heard perhaps it's come out of the Katherine Riverbed. What do you know about the source of that plant?
Yeah, similar sort of unknown status about that, I suppose. We had an employee that worked here that I think found or had the original plant that we had on work here. And that came on farm because we were doing, or there was a sinus based here at the time that was looking at different plant sources or for biofuels, and we had grown different trees, and cassava sort of fitted in that mix. And there was a remnant plant here in the horticulture block that when this study sort of got flagged, or we got funding to do this, we actually just used that plant, and
here it is.
Basically, it's been replicated out to for a couple of hectares of cassava now. So,
and other farms in the region as well. So don't know exactly where it came from, but I guess the question is, there is a lot of interest in this crop, particularly this year, for its potential as a livestock feed here in the territory. What do you see as the potential, both as a human food, but also for a livestock finishing product?
Yeah, so, I mean, ultimately, we can feed livestock a lot of different products and they grow, and it all comes down to price and performance. If we can grow a crop, and it, you know, clearly it grows well, but there are a fair few costs with harvesting it in Indonesia or Asian countries, of course. You know, labour's quite cheap and they do a lot of things manually, whereas, you know, our sort of systems, our typical systems over here, we like to mechanise things. And this soil potentially is, we're on a red loamy soil at the moment, it's probably not the best soil to be growing it in. So we might have a few more issues than others potentially. But, you know, if we can get our costs of production down and we come up with a cheap cattle food, the likelihood of that happening, I'm pretty sceptical at the moment, to be honest. But yeah, it might work into someone's system. And we're not forgetting that we're making these comments now, but in the future things might change.
Mm. And particularly the lack of a mechanical harvesting option, you've had some trouble with that?
Yeah, well, we're pinning our hopes on a potato harvester at the moment. And we've tried that before, but we had some unexpected rain and different things like that. So we had a couple of issues with getting the separation of the tuber and the soil. And we, as we said earlier, this is probably our third, fourth crop of cassava. And the protein in the leaves is actually incredibly high. It's actually in the order of 20-24%. And so we obviously thought that was pretty valuable. And if we could use the whole plant and use the tops for the protein and then the tubers for the energy, we would have a balanced diet. At the moment, we're sort of just focusing on the tubers because energy is probably a shortage, whereas we can use cheaper sources of nitrogen, say, you know, urea or something, and balance it out. But when we talk about, you know, organic sources of protein and things like that in the future, people are sort of watching cassava from that angle as well.
So the potential for a broader scale or even a niche market, you think, could happen, but you're a little bit sceptical, but it does still have a potentially a value for on-property feed?
I mean, cassava's not new by any means. There's a lot of research done in Queensland in the 70s. There's a, I understand there's a large farm in northern Queensland that's growing cassava. I mean, you know, these niche crops pop up and they work for people for their own situations. Cassava may work in that. You know, there's probably byproducts that could be fed to cattle and other products fed to humans and things like that. You wouldn't be, you know, it might fit in there somewhere.
That's livestock scientist Kieran McCosker talking cassava with our Catherine reporter Carmen Brown. Now, quickly to some mining news. The exploration company Todd River Resources says it'll launch a major drilling program on its tenements in Central Australia next month. The work will kick off at the company's Mount Hardy Copper Zinc project, which is about 300 k's northwest of Alice Springs. Managing Director Will Dix says the company found some promising results at the site last year, so it's going back in to do a more comprehensive investigation.
So it's around about 5,000 metres all up at the moment. That'll take us through to about the middle of May, towards the end of May. After that, it becomes results-driven. So, you know, if we continue to see good evidence of mineralisation and good targets to drill, we'll keep that going through the second half of the year. So at the moment, it's one drill rig, full-time, double-shifting, so looking at about 5,000 metres between early February and early to the middle of May, all things going well.
And if those good results hold out for the rest of the year, what will that mean in terms of the next phase, taking the project from exploration to mining? What do you anticipate there?
Yeah, there's a long way to go still, obviously. You know, we have to go through the resource process and then working out whether what we've got stacks up from an economic point of view. But look, I would like to think that by the end of 2019, we'll have a pretty good handle on how big the initial mineralisation can be. And then all things going well, it'll flow on in 2020 and beyond. So, look, probably a bit early to put a date on any kind of development, but certainly by the end of this year, we'll have a pretty good line of sight on whether something's going to go at least into a sort of feasibility study type level.
You're hoping to kick off the program in February. As we know, it's been very, very hot down in Central Australia with heatwave conditions. Do you anticipate that may be an issue that may slow down your progress this year?
Yeah, look, it's tough on people. It really is. There's no two ways about that. You know, luckily enough, there hasn't been a lot of rain, so access isn't an issue at this stage. But we're really conscious of the toll that relentless hot weather has on our people. So we'll have a whole bunch of things in place to make sure that the guys get to sleep in the coolest conditions possible for them, so they can at least recharge their batteries. And we've got a pretty comprehensive safety management plan along with our drilling partners out there to make sure that we look after all our guys. But you know, it means that you don't push them. You don't get 12 hours a day kind of work. People knock off when it's hot and they take breaks in the middle of the day and they'll do sort of 2 weeks away and a week at home. So look, we're really conscious of that and making sure all our people are well looked after.
As you're probably well aware, the Territory's going through a bit of a tough financial time at the moment, so any news of exploration or investment is usually pretty welcome. Will you be using, a lot of local contractors? Will this generate opportunities for locals?
Yeah, look, we've got a couple of local guys working with us. In terms of the drilling contractor, we're going to use a group that's coming from Queensland this year. We've got some other projects in the Territory that we'll use local guys for to drill those, though. So we're trying to include as many local Territorians as we can in the work we do.
That's the Managing Director of Todd River Resources, Will Dix, having a chat to Carmen Brown. Still plenty to come on today's Country Hour, including a chat with Richie Hayes. He grows table grapes near Alice Springs and has just wrapped up his harvest. How did it all go, especially with those super-duper hot temperatures? We'll hear from Richie very soon. And we learn about Brucey the Brahmin. A Brahmin bull with his own Facebook page, an absolute celebrity. That's all coming your way before 1:30. But now it's news time, 1 o'clock, and the newsroom's got some big news about the NT Cabinet.
How you going there? It's Mick Markham here. I'm a bit touch over 70, and I've been a ringer most of my life and a jack of all trades, buffalo catching, pet meeting, mining. But I'm now settled down in Pine Creek. I'm Territory born, Territory bred, thick in the muscle and thick in the head. Most days, now I've still got the ABC radio, and I like to sit down with a good, strong, bloody cup of tea, black tea with a bit of lime in it, and listen to the Country Hour.
Thank you for that, Mick. Matt Brown with you this afternoon. I hope you're well this Tuesday. And I wonder how you're feeling about the news we just heard there. The member for Port Darwin, Paul Kirby, has been appointed as the Northern Territory's newest minister. There was a spot in the cabinet because, of course, of what happened to Ken Valves just prior to Christmas. So Paul Kirby steps up. The Chief Minister, Michael Gunner, now expected to announce a cabinet reshuffle on Thursday. Who will get the all-important portfolio of primary industry and resources? When we posed this question to you last week, we got quite a few people calling up, sending text messages, saying they'd like to see Paul Kirby as the Minister for Primary Industry and Resources. We got a few votes for Ken Vowles as well. Don't think that's happening. Got a few votes for Gary Higgins as well. I don't think that's happening. Anyway, we find out on Thursday, but that's the big news, Justin. Paul Kirby's been appointed as the Territory's newest minister. If you've bought some grapes in the last month or so, there's a strong chance they have come from the Red Centre. There's a few farms around the Tea Tree region and near Alice Springs. The harvest has just wrapped up for those farmers. How did it all go, especially with those huge temperatures that they've been dealing with? We'll find out pretty soon when we hear from Richie Hayes. First, let's head to the Weather Bureau. Sally Cutter is there this afternoon. How are you, Sally?
Oh, not too bad, thanks.
That's a go. Just looking at the rainfall figures up to 9 a.m. this morning, there's some nice figures in there.
Oh, yes, certainly. And yesterday was actually fairly quiet. There was a few things got going quite late, but Dilgeron Hill had 67.5 mils, Upper Waterhouse 45, Conway's 42. Central Plateau 39, Merganella 33, Bulman 27, Goyder River 27, Catherine Country Club over 2 days they had 23 mils. Nyawili, 22. Warlock Ponds, 21.5 mils. Nooka, 20. Snowdrop Creek, 20. Then we're getting into the teens. Mount Stowe only had 13 mils. But there's been some good falls out there. We should see those. It's still relatively quiet today, and then gradually picking up as we go into the end towards the end of the week.
Is there more to come?
Yes.
Great.
Yeah, so what's happening is we're getting another monsoon burst, it looks like. The wind's picking up through the Arrow Fiore Sea, so possibly even reaching strong to later tomorrow, and then maybe sort of heading towards gales or near gales. So by the time we get to the weekend, Saturday looks like it'd be the peak, and that's probably also when we're going to see the most shower and storm activity, and possibly even some rain over the top end.
Wow, that is a good headline right there, Sally Cutter. We're getting another monsoon burst. I love it. How far south could the rain go?
It depends on what heavy you're looking at for the rain. The heavier falls are really going to be over the top end and predominantly along the north and northwest coasts, particularly on Sunday. But we're going to see right across the top end picking up. Catherine's probably right on the southern extent.
Okay.
And we might actually see some of that that far northeast corner of the Barkly and eastern Carpentaria district as well.
Gee, the Barkly needs it. I see the temperatures again today in the Barkly. There's a lot of plus 40s there.
Yeah, they haven't had the respite. They're going to need the cloud brought round, the moisture and humidity brought round, the low that's going to be locate itself in the... So basically between Mornington Island and the coast, if you go in a southeasterly direction, so it's going to be right down in that bottom part of the Gulf of Carpentaria. And that, as the winds come around that, there's a possibility they'll bring that little bit more moisture around, which will allow those showers and storms to form and hopefully increase the cloud. Because it's not just the rain coming down through there that's going to drop the temperatures. You're going to need the cloud cover to keep those temperatures down.
Yeah, and just around the Alice over the next few days, what is expected?
We're going to see the odd shower and storm, probably more likely... down Yulara way, we've had a bit of a trough through there, but that's weakening out now. So today's probably the best chance for Yulara. And then Alice Springs, it's not overly likely. So we're looking at maybe 10% chance of getting anything. So it's unfortunate they're also going to warm up for a couple of days. There's the trough that's been sitting, banking that cloud, bringing that cloud band down to the southwest corner, weakens out, and we see the winds turning a bit more easterly again.
Beauty. Okay. Have yourself a lovely afternoon, Sally.
Will do, thanks.
Thanks for the update. It is 1:10 here on the Country Hour. Well, the table grape harvest in Central Australia has wrapped up, and by all accounts, it was a pretty good season for the farmers there, despite those extremely hot temperatures. The Rocky Hill Grape Farm near Alice Springs, it went through weeks of 40-degree-plus days, but the owner out there, Richie Hayes, says he's really happy with how the crop performed.
We had a pretty good season. The extreme heat was a bit of a problem, but we got through that and had plenty of crew. Had a really good, really, really good crew, actually.
Where did they come from?
The contract crew out of Mildura. We had to get them out reasonably early, and the day is just too hot out there. What was happening, if you work them all day in the field and it's too hot, the next day they're no good, so you've got to manage your people pretty well.
What time would you start?
As soon as you can see in the morning. They were going out there. We even had to go picking at night time.
How did that go?
Yeah, all right. It probably looks after your fruit a bit better, but it's still pretty hard to do. It's not as easy as it sounds.
In overall terms, then, how did it go?
Yeah, good. Had a good season. Pretty good crop on there. Price was good. Everything was good.
How difficult was it to keep the water up to them?
Yeah, the vines, I'm pumping plenty of water out on them, keeping going. The fruit here is pretty strong. It was really strong, actually, for the temperature we had. And then with the people, I've got little chest freezers on trailers, and you fill them up with water, and they've got a tap on them. You take them out to the paddock, and the people can get a drink out there. And we're drinking 4 chest freezers a day of water.
How much would that have been?
Probably about 800 litres between 60 people.
Wow. They were getting stuck.
Might have been that much, but it was a lot of water.
They were getting stuck into it. Now, the final product, as you said, the grapes came off okay. They looked okay.
Yeah. The grapes went traveled pretty well for the conditions we were picking in. The fruit was pretty good, in pretty good nick, really.
Where did you send them this year?
They went all around Australia, Queensland, New South Wales, Victoria, Tasmania, South Australia, everywhere.
Prices, how did they compare? How did that compare?
Yeah, not a bad. It was a fairly super strong, but didn't crash. That's the main thing.
How many years now have you been picking grapes?
We planted in 2002, so 2003.
How much have things changed across that period?
Oh, huge. It's different ways of doing it. The way we pack a box, the way we grow the stuff. Every year is a different year. We've been doing it here since 2002, and I've not picked one year that's even close to the year before or any other year.
And how much you reckon that evolution will continue?
Oh, everything. The packaging has changed significantly. The things that we have to do to get the fruit out of here, like the audits and stuff we have to do now, all the quality assurance and stuff, and it's really ramped up nowadays. What used to be classed as a great, 10, 15 years ago, is not even close to what is being produced today.
You've had to modify the grape itself, or what?
Oh, yeah, we do other things to make it bigger, get the vine growing. We're always trialling different varieties, always trialling different ways of growing it, always different methods of fertilising it, different sprays, different everything. You've got to be on top of it.
Always learning. That's Richie Hayes from Rocky Hill Table Grapes. The season done and dusted for Richie and the team. He was having a chat there to Lindsay Wright.
G'day, I'm Brad Inglis from Sturt Plain Station, south of Dunmara on the Stuart Highway, and you're listening to the NT Country Hour.
Now, on the Country Hour yesterday, we heard from Kate and Tick Everett from Catherine, who over the weekend, in case you missed the news, they were named the Australian Local Heroes for 2019 for their anti-bullying campaign and all the work that they've done with Dolly's Dream. Now, it wasn't the only recognition that Dolly's Dream received in the Australia Day Awards. Last year's Barclay Beef Dinner, which raised more than $17,000 for the Dolly's Dream charity, it was named the best local community event in the Barclay Council's Australia Day Awards, which is a fantastic effort. One of the organisers of the event was Danielle Haig. Here's a bit of her.
We are absolutely thrilled. We were gobsmacked. Had no idea we were going to win, but it's just, absolutely thrilling.
What will you do this year at the beef dinner? Any plans?
This year we're hoping to get another venue so we can hold more people and cater for more guests this year. So hopefully trying to make it bigger and better every year.
And I can imagine that the charity revolving around Dolly, they'd be thrilled with that money.
Yes, they were very thankful, and it was really nice. And we also got phone calls and messages from Tick and Kate Everett, Dolly's parents. They were very grateful, and it was really nice to have them call as well and acknowledge it.
That's Danielle Haig, one of the organisers of the Barclay Beef Dinner, which last year raised more than $17,000 for Dolly's Dream, and on the weekend named the best local community event in the Barclay Council's Australia Day Awards. Well done to all of the organisers. That is just fantastic. And if you missed our program yesterday, which did feature Kate and Tick Everett, well, you can always catch the podcast. Well, his name is Brucey the Brahmin. The pictures of him moseying along the beaches at sunset are something to behold. He's got his own Facebook page. He's an absolute celebrity. Let's find out more about him next.
You gotta speak up, even if your world's gonna break. You gotta speak up.
Come on, let's speak up.
Speak up, even if your voice shakes. Tom Curtin, Sarah Storer teaming up for that tune. All the proceeds from that song also go into Dolly's Dream. 20 past one here on the Country Hour. One of the most popular stories on the ABC this month has been about a Brahmin, a grey Brahmin from Western Australia called Brucey. Brucey the Brahmin, he is just winning the internet this year. He's got his own Facebook page. He's an absolute celebrity. And one of his fans joins me now, our very own Dan Fitzgerald. Brucey, what can you tell us about Brucey the Brahmin? He's from Albany.
Yeah, way down in southwest WA. Not a place you expect to find Brahmins, no. Really. No. And a place you'd least expect to find a Brahmin is on the beach, because he's pretty famous. As you said, he's got his own Facebook page. He loves to go for a walk along the beach. The owner, he's got some of his own horses. So, he takes Brucey out along the beach for a walk every now and then. And Brucey does his own surf reports.
Hang on a minute. Does his own surf reports?
Yep. So there's a pretty regular segment on his Facebook page. Is Brucey having a walk along and judges the surf. He, you know, walks up to the shallows and has a bit of a sniff at the water, even licks it a little bit.
Tests the salt content.
Tests the salt. He's been known to pick up a bit of seaweed as he's walking around, and it just makes for some amazing images. This 350-kilo, about 18-month-old grey Brahmin just walking along a pristine southwest WA beach.
Yeah, just looking at the picture that was used in the ABC story, there's Brucey. There's a border collie behind him as well for all the dog lovers. And wow, look at him go. He's having a ball.
And he even, on occasions, likes to try to mount the horses.
Oh, dear, Brucey. Oh, dear. We might need to find a few ladies for Brucey.
Yeah, and he's actually he's a mascot for the local rodeo, and he was actually brought in by his owner to mow the lawn in front of the 10-pin bowling alley there in Albany in WA. And he's a pretty tame fellow. His owner, Tom Kennedy, says it did take a little bit to get him trained up, though.
The first time we tried to catch him to get him on the truck, that wasn't going too good. He was running away and ended up catching him like a sheep. We grabbed front legs, back legs and lifted him up in the truck, barely could lift him. And he was used to people, which was one thing, which was great. But taming him, it's the same with the horses, like trust. As soon as they know that you're not going to hurt them and that you're there to have a lot of fun with them and be their best mate, the only other thing you got to have is a respect. You can't let him walk over you, so we do a bit of training with that as well. When he comes up to his food, he's got to stop and wait before you allow him the food, so that can end up in a fight as well if you're not careful. So, yeah, the only time he puts his head down at me or anyone else is when he thinks that you're threatening him, or when he first started pooping on the back patio on the concrete. He would... As soon as I said, "Oi, Bruce," and we turn around, he's ready to thump me, you know, because he thought he was getting told off and that he had to protect himself. So I've learnt now you don't get into fights with Bruce. You just coax him with carrots and teach him in other ways, you know.
So does he have a bit of a following in town? Do people come down here especially to see Bruce?
Yeah, I had some disappointed customers on Sunday. They brought some kids in and they were so disappointed little Brucey wasn't here. And my daughter was at the counter and she said, "Well, I told Daddy couldn't bring him in today because we're running late to open up." So they do. They come down to see little Brucey. But I'll generally bring him down when the weather's fine. It's nice and still so he can just lay there and not sort of get hit by the wind. And if I'm not running the carts as well, it's a bit busy. You want to make sure he's under control and kids aren't just running through and grabbing him.
And his other main duty is promoting the stampede, I believe.
Yes, he's just a natural. People love him. You know, you can have the horses there and everyone wants to see Bruce. So like the PCYC kids, I took him down there and they were all giving him a rub. And the idea of Bruce is to show the fun-loving side of the rodeo animals as well. That, you know, little Brucey is a good example. He had no real purpose in life if he was to be left how he was in the place he was at. So he would have probably ended up getting sold and chopped up into dog meat or whatever. So, yeah, have a little Brucey. It really grabs people's attention and showcase another side of him. The Wilson Brewery keen to have him there, and hopefully they'll do us a special brew for the Stampede, and Brucey hopefully will feature on it. It'll be quite interesting to see what we can achieve.
There he is, Tom Kennedy, the owner of Brucey, the famous grey Brahmin. And I've just been told, Matt, come on, he's almost got 1,000 followers on his Facebook page now, Brucey the Brahmin. Super famous, one of the most popular stories on the ABC this month. If you go into a search engine and type Brucey the Brahmin. You'll find him.
We are one.
Every Aussie has a story about the ABC. Just ask Warwick Thornton.
ABC is incredibly good for Australia because it is ours and it is us and it is who we are as a country. And it's changed as the country's changed. ABC has been part of my life for all of my life. It is a voice that can't be played with.
Share your stories at abc.net.au/yours.
ABC, it's yours.
Just quickly, I got a message here from SeaLink that says it would like to advise of a schedule change to the Groot Bickerton Noombawa ferry service this week due to community request. Please refer to the SeaLink website for more details of that schedule change. There you go. If you're planning on getting on the ferry from Groot to Bickerton to Noombawa, maybe just double check. Sounds like a nice day out. Jumping on that ferry. Happy, happy days. Let's head to the sale yards now on the Country Hour. With all the latest prices from Roma, here is Cheryl Stefano.
Cattle numbers continued to fall, down by 1,453 to 4,747 head at today's Roma store sale. Cattle were drawn from as far as Alice Springs. A good panel of buyers was present and operating. The yarding was dominated by yearling steers, and steers were still selling at the time of this interim report. The overall quality of the yarding was mixed. Lightweight yearling steers under 280 kilos to restockers fell by 16 cents. Yearling steers 280 to 330 kilos to restockers fell by 11, while the medium weight yearling steers to feed rose between 1 to 5 cents. Heavyweight yearling steers to feed rose by 6 to 18 cents. A large sample of lightweight yearling steers under 280 kilos to restockers sold to 299.2 to average 267. A good number of yearling steers 280 to 330 kilos to restockers or background made to 282.2 to average 270. Medium weight yearling steers to feed sold to 278.2 to average 267, while the heavyweight yearling steers to feed sold to 277.2 to average 268. This has been Cheryl Stefano for the National Livestock Reporting Service.
Thanks for that, Cheryl. In the live export trade, feeder steers to Indonesia still fetching around $3.25 a kilo. I've been hearing maybe there's been the odd order around the $3.30 mark. So still good money at the start of the year for the live export trade into Indo. After 3 o'clock on your radio, Michaela Simpson will be there with you. What can we expect, Michaela?
Just when you thought B2M had completely ended, not giving us any more music, decided that they had packed up shop and that was it, leaving behind the legacy that they have, they drop this tune.
So they're back.
Kind of. They're back in partnership with Tasman Keith and also Birds, the Catherine Ray's now Melbourne-based hip-hop artist. And that track is called Smoking Ceremony. So we're going to catch up with Birds, who is obviously one of the massive collaborators in this particular track, and talk about, you know, the fact that it's a bit timely and also what it's like to be working with B2M again.
Yeah, because that was huge news at the back end of last year, one of the territory's greats. Done, but like a good John Farnham comeback, hey?
Exactly. Never too far away.
That's Michaela on your radio after 3 o'clock today with that story and plenty of good music, I am sure. Now, we kicked off today's program talking about the GoFundMe page, which in 24 hours has raised more than $50,000 for NT farmer Gavin Howie. If you haven't donated yet, please jump onto that page. Have a lovely afternoon. Keep it rural.